First, I would like you to state your name, age, and how you identify racially and ethnically.
Why are those important?
Say that again.
Why is that information important?
Oh, no. These are just formal questions I have to ask.
But I want to know why that one's important.
Oh, how you identify?
Yeah, and what my age is.
Oh, because where we want to look at all the groups that were impacted during Boston busing and desegregation, so that includes people that identify as Black, white, or Hispanic.
So if I identify as human, what does that mean?
Oh, that's fine too. and your name and age?
My name is Melvin King, and I am 84 years old.
And where do you live in Boston?
I live in the south end of Boston.
Okay, my name is Fabrice Montesol, and we're currently at the South End Technology Center. My first question, what's your relationship to Boston busing and desegregation that came to head in the 1970s? Who were you during that time? Where were you living? What was your involvement in Boston during that time?
Well, just to be clear, you asked where was I living?
Yeah.
Okay. And I was living in Boston.
And what's your relationship to Boston busing and the desegregation crisis during that time?
Relation. Can you give me an example of what a relationship would be?
Were you involved in certain groups or fighting for desegregation of schools in Boston in the 1970s? Heading up to the Boston busing crisis in Boston during that time.
It's kind of difficult to answer in a way when you say the Boston busing crisis. The crisis. To call it busing is erroneous. Crisis was racism and denial of equal protection of students of color by the city of Boston. So I think that's an important thing for me to put on the table. I think it's misrepresenting the situation when you talk about busing. And the children are going to school on buses all over the country and here. So that is not an issue or a problem as far as I'm concerned. Denial of access to the full range of services offered is what the crisis or the issue is. And people took action and it became more significant reaction when it was proven, because we started out saying it was de facto and that certain conditions led to schools being almost all white or almost all Black or color. And then we found out that there was a systematic approach, illegal as it turned out to be, by elected officials with the support of citizenry, some of the citizenry of Boston, to discriminate and to deny access to families with children of color, particularly of African heritage, access to a full range of schools. One of the things that happened was a group of folks who had been worked with by the Northern Student Movement, and they had set up a tutoring program, looked at an analysis of who got into the exam schools, and it showed that students from Roxbury, parts of Southampton, Dorchester, were denied access because they couldn't pass the exam. And it turned out that they weren't given the same level of preparation by the schools. Other parts of the cities with white students, they may have done 80 pages in the book, and the students here had only done 30. So there was no way that they could compete. And so when some parents found out about that, they made an effort to get their children into schools outside where there were empty seats. And so a group headed by some women developed what they call Operation Exodus, which was a biblical connotation in terms of one of the books, in terms of what the children of Israel had to do. So that movement sparked a great deal of activity in the community to challenge and change, including the work of the NAACP, which then filed a suit. And that led to the decision that Judge Garrity made, because the suit proved that it wasn't accidental segregation or segregation because of where you lived. It was calculated, legislated approach by the people who ran the schools and the city to deny access. And so that, I don't think people deal with, they just try to oversimplify it by talking about busing. That is not the issue.
Do you remember the release of the Garrity decision? Do you have any stories about when it was made public during the summer of 1974?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean.
What do I mean is that, do you remember kind of like the climate in Boston when the decision was released?
Well, climate in Boston was one in which the denial on the part of the white electorate was that we didn't have that problem of segregation because that was down south. And even though they were shown votes of the school committee to deny, they still didn't want to deal with it. So it was just non-acceptance of reality. And they were not interested in supporting. I shouldn't say they, because there were some folks who were white who were very supportive in the city. So to say what happened when people were angry, they were from South Boston or other parts of the city, about the prospects of having to deal with desegregation.
I just wanted to say that we're asking specifically about the decision because the anniversary of the decision was last week, and so we're just trying to see what people remember about when it was released and still.
Well, obviously, from our standpoint, our being the Black community and NAACP and the parents who were involved in the suit, it was vindication of the racist approach that existed in the school committee and a lot of the governors and people in the city of Boston. It's not, in my mind, it is important to have people at that point understand that they had done something illegal and wrong, and that they supported people who were doing things that were illegal and wrong and denial, and that they had some, my expression, skin in that game, okay? So, I mean, that's what, and I can speak for myself, was important about the decision when it came down. It also meant that the next round of intense antagonism and expressions of racial hatred emerged more openly, etc. So, I don't know how to explain it any more than that.
Can you speak more on your involvement in Boston during that time? Were you working? Were you a part of a particular organization?
Well, what time are you talking about?
1970s, early 1970s.
You see, the problem is that this stuff started in the 60s. And when we talked about Operation Exodus, that was before the decision. So it seems as if you're trying to telescope things into that decision when there was a lot of things that were going on from the 60, 61, 3, 65. I ran the school committee. And prior to that, Bruce Batson had run, I think, in 59. And because of the concerns that existed about the quality of education in the schools where Black children attended. And during those times, we had what we call Stay Out for Freedom, boycott of the schools. We even had a stop day where we didn't work, people didn't go to work. We had marches and the whole bit to emphasize the problems that we were dealing with, not only in schools, housing, and jobs. So that was part of the firm that was building. And even before that decision, we had the racial imbalance law, which was a state attempt to deal with the segregation by making it possible for students of color to go to school in the suburbs. That came before Gary's decision. That's because of the work in organizing people of all parts, with Batson, Tom Atkins, and many folks who played a role.
What's your experience with equal access excellence pertaining to the Boston public school system? Well, the lack of equal access and excellence in Boston public schools then and now. So comparing the system in the 60s and 70s, how resources were distributed between schools back then and now.
For me personally, it's difficult to say. When the Garrity decision came, there were few teachers of color in the system. In the next several years, the representation improved. The number of folks who became principals and whatnot increased. But you have to understand that there was something else that was going on. And that is the emergence of what we call community-controlled schools. So there are several community schools that got developed. A new school for children, St. Joseph's, the parochial school, which was run using the values of the Yusuf Sadama that we use at Kwanzaa. And there was, there was another school up in Dorchester. So the community then said, we should pull together and develop our own school. And then with Model Cs, the Model High School was developed, which was supported by the state, which was to develop a way to show how new educational approaches would make a difference. The state closed that after, I guess, about 75, 76. That was unfortunate because it had provided an opportunity for the children to get an experience which was different from what was going on in the school. So why am I mentioning this is because it wasn't like people sat on their hands waiting for something to happen, took action. Exodus to schools, model cities, a lot of tutorial programs, the Northern Student Movement came into play around what we needed to do in order to provide the children with the quality of schools and services.
From my experience learning about especially Boston busing, there's a lot of negativity around it, that somehow nothing good came out of it. That's the dominant narrative I've gotten. Can you speak more on the the judge's decision and the aftermath, and was they any good?
Let's get it straight. When you stop somebody from breaking the law that has been damaging your children, then that has to be good. I don't even understand any other way to identify it. Okay? So, the second part of it is the level of consciousness that was raised throughout the city about practices that were illegal, and getting that information out there for people so that they could not continue to go with their heads buried in the sand. And I must admit that even Ed Brooke, who was U.S. Senator, had a speech when we were doing the stop day, said this is Boston, not Birmingham. Okay. And so if you understand that was the dominant response to the situation here, it was as if it was almost okay that there was supposedly a little desegregation here as opposed to someplace else. Right? And segregation, this could not be, it's still segregation and a violation of human rights and potential. So I think it's important that the understanding of the climate book, I'm in the legislature, I bring the legislators together from Boston and say, listen, he's going to come down with this plan, he, Gary, for having children go to school in different parts of the city. So why don't we propose, like put on the table, that the schools in each neighborhood be run by the people in the neighborhood and not by people who did not like their children. And so we met, and I thought we were going to have a deal. They went and talked to the teachers who said, oh, we can't do that. It'll cost us jobs. And so when they came back and said they wouldn't buy it, I said, okay, you all are saying you want the judge to decide on how the schools were going to operate and how children were going to get to school. But they could mouth all they want about children going to school on the bus, but they had a chance to work with us to provide for community control of the schools. Okay. I try to get people to understand that very clearly, that they put the teacher's job over the children's interests. Okay. They wanted to maintain control. And what happened then is, the other thing, because I proposed that the people in these community schools decide who the principals will be, who the teachers will be, and all of those kind of things that would show that the community is going to control the schools, etc. So, people don't want to deal with that aspect of it, but that was a serious problem in that they allowed the teachers' union to put their children on a bus, and then they complained about us. So.
What is the relevance of the Gary decision for today? Is it important for people to know about it? If so, why?
Well, I think it's, there's a statement that people forget, their history will repeat it. I think it's absolutely an imperative that people understand the significance of the effort, the reason for the decision, and what its impact is as we speak, as the mayor tries to put us back into that situation. So, and even including coming up with charter schools so that now the teachers need to understand that the control of some of the jobs that they would have had or that they thought they'd lose with us, they're losing with the charter schools. And so it took a while for it to happen, but that's the story as we speak. So we don't have the community schools that we suggested. They have now charter schools, and they get to be privatized where resources get taken out of the city schools. Can I answer your question?
Yes. Based on your experience, what can the city learn from the Garrity decision? What do we need to remember and understand for our future?
Well, the city, if you're talking about the city as a whole, we need to have a process where and a culture which believes that all the children are our children and that we want the best for all the children. And that every child, I want to have the best education that I want for my blood and flesh child. And until we move people in that direction, we're going to have a continued approach that we see now. We have a school assignment program that is geared to protect the status quo, makes it more difficult for students, has no way of evaluating classroom by classroom, school by school, about what a child or a parent can expect. And it's all under the guise of return to the neighborhood schools. Well, there are issues that just happened 2 days ago where Councilor Yancey proposed a new high school and seven of the white rep city councilors voted against it. Well, what's that say? And who's in the system? And as long as we don't understand that that vote was against the interest of the total community, it hits hardest the group of students who would lose an opportunity to be in a much, much more up-to-date facility. But we're also seeing it with the Madison Vocation School, where some of the mayor's folks have moved in there, and the school is nowhere living up to its potential. We have a superintendent saying we got a 54% graduation rate. Give me a break. Other schools get 85, 90 graduation rates. How is the fact that we went from 40 45 to 55 significant. It tells the story that things weren't happening in that school in the interest of the children. And those children are as bright as any group of children anywhere. They're all that. Okay, then it means that there's something not happening at that school as well. So, you've seen, I don't know if you're reading the papers lately about the issues at Madison. Well, it's because a group of parents are now, with teachers, community folks, putting the heat on the superintendent and now the mayor about that. The problem has been that the clergy, community, have not challenged the system in the way that we did in the past. And as long as that doesn't happen, then we're playing a role that's not in the interest of our children, all the children, or in the city. So it seems to me that that what we need to learn is that if we don't, as the saying goes, if we are not internally and eternally vigilant, then the efforts become eroded and makes moving of the next round even tougher, because people go with it, and well, we did that. Okay. So we have to change that. One of the major problems, as I see it, is that we have we don't have a high expectation for the children and a belief that they could make it. We have algebra as a ceiling when calculus ought to be the floor. And until we have that kind of a recognition and belief in the capacity of the children, we'll be back here, or you'll be back here in another 10 or 15 years.
Thank you. This is Anna's interview.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks. Do you have any questions for me in regards to the project?
Yeah, why are you doing this?
I'm a product of the Boston Public Schools. I want to be an educator after I graduate from college. And
are you in college now?
Yeah.
Where?
Tufts University. And I agree with you in the need for us to look at our history so we could learn what always happened so we won't make the same mistakes over again. And because, like, especially when pertaining to Boston and Boston Public Schools, we're still fighting for quality education across the board. The same issues keep on coming up over and over again. And it's especially for the students. With me, I got on a bus every single day, and I didn't know why, essentially. Like, why am I getting on a bus to go across town to go to a school when there's a high school right down the street from me? I lived in Hyde Park.
And the school was close by Hyde Park, right?
Yeah.
And you couldn't go there?
I guess I could have went there. I went to West Foxbury High School.
Because
I was told by one of my white teachers, white middle school teachers, that apparently was a good school. I came to find out that wasn't the case. Not that Thai Pha Khai was any better in terms of preparing you academically for college or after high school. Right now, it got shut down, but it's reopening again.
High Park. Or which Park school?
Oh, High Park, I believe. I don't know what school's going to be there now. In terms of understanding Boston and why it's so segregated, if you read up on history and learn about the politics of the city, you will see why certain groups are in certain areas, and learn, especially pertaining to gentrification in Boston, certain demographics are coming back and displacing others. So this project is important to me because, first and foremost, I'm a product of the system, and I've definitely been impacted by the inequity of the system in terms of its lack of preparation, academic preparation for college, and my peers, which is it's still doing a disservice to as we speak today. So that's why this project is important to me.
Have you interviewed any of your friends?
No.
Why not?
I guess the friends that I have now are all out of state or out of the country.
You don't know where the folks you went to school with when you were in middle school are? Are any of them still living in the same neighborhood?
Some of them, but I don't see them that much.
Why not?
Because I guess as we grew up, we went a different path.
Mm-hmm.
Lost contact.
Might be interesting to see if you can locate a couple of them. Get their thoughts.
At first, didn't know what Boston busing was, and in terms of on a grander scale. So after they saw, especially young black children being discriminated against and getting rocks thrown at them while they were on the bus or while they were trying to walk to school, it was traumatizing for some of them. I could sense that they had a hard time just watching the video or just talking about it, and for them it explained a lot of why the school is all the way it is right now, in terms of the schools being either predominantly black and Hispanic, and just the inequalities within the schools, and especially for some, they see good schools as the schools that are predominantly white due to the institutional racism that's in place today, in terms of the disparities between predominantly white and black schools. Across the board, they really didn't know much about Boston busing and desegregation. So just watching Eyes on the Prize was an eye-opener for them. As it was for me for the first time I watched it, because the North in general is seen as a very progressive, less racist than the South. And just to see the Eyes on the Prize video on Boston busing and desegregation, you couldn't tell the difference, almost. It's like, what's going on? What happened to Boston, this progressive, liberal city? And you have white parents, protesters, yelling, throwing rocks at young black kids, not wanting them to go to their school. So...
you talked about, you asked me about then and now. Now we have a situation, let me put it this way. In those days, people could walk the streets any day of night, anybody, women, children, etc., in our community. That's not the case now. So, what do you hear from your peers about all the violence and killings that are going on?
I guess I don't really understand the question really. What do they say about the violence in other neighborhoods, particularly Boston? I guess for the most part, with my friends, the one that I talk to a lot, the one that are in college, but they see it as an unfortunate, I guess, circumstance, especially when you talk about, since I'm in academia, we also got the school to prison pipeline, and how it's especially young black males are pushed out of high school and middle school, and most of the time they end up on the streets or in jail, and as a means of survival, at times it's you end up selling drugs and...
You know any of your friends who do that? I'm not your friend, but I mean, any of the folks that you went to school with, middle school, any of the folks around your block that you told you?
I definitely had a couple of classmates that dealt with narcotics, definitely, and dropped out of school. Some, unfortunately, ended up dead or in jail. Disproportionately young black males, I would say. So, I often like to think of it as a war, and particularly on young black and Latino males, and how we're just being killed or railroaded into jails and prison at a disproportionate number. I guess not to take away from all the factors that play into someone dropping out of school. Of course, there's that personal responsibility, but also the fact that where suspended or kicked out of school for the smallest of things, and we're labeled as special need, or in special ed classes, even though when we're neither of those things most of the time. So the labeling and the high suspension rate can be attributed to the system. But at the same time, I guess you have a bunch of other factors that play, that are in effect in terms of your home life, socioeconomic level. So there's a lot of obstacles that lead to certain outcomes, especially within our communities.
So what do you think will change it?
Tell about your story. How did you turn around academically?
With my story, so I wasn't born in America. I came to the States when I was 6 years old from Haiti. So with me, my father in particular, he always told me to do well at school. That's it, pretty much. And to not disappoint him, I would try to do well. Fast forward to high school, I'm 16, 17 years old, my sophomore year, and I wasn't doing well, but at the same time, I wasn't doing bad. I was a pretty average student, and I got my wake-up call when I learned how well I was doing, and in terms of a GPA wise, I was under the assumption I was doing better, but unfortunately I wasn't. So I pretty much cut all my ties to all the bad friends I had, pretty much, that were not, that didn't have the same mindset that I had in terms of getting out of this terrible public school system, and that there's life after high school. I have to do something after I graduate from high school. I was lucky enough to have two mentors that were able to introduce me to certain texts that was not available at my high school. I read Howard Zinn, The People's History, which I enjoyed because it showed all the inequities and all the policies that were put in place to keep certain groups in a particular predicament and elevate other groups or make it easier. I also read W.E.B. Du Bois' Souls of Black Folk, in my junior year of high school.
Who was your teacher then?
No, this was independent reading.
Okay.
And I read a bunch of other books. I watched John Henry Clark, A Great and Mighty Walk, my junior year in high school. So I was introduced to all these texts and documentaries, which was in a lot of ways liberating, in the sense that I was able to look at my neighborhood, the city, on a more racial lens, and kind of see the politics of it, of who's getting what in terms of resources, that, oh, my school isn't bad because the kids are not intelligent, but we're not getting enough resources. The teachers that are in front of us could care less, for the most part, whether or not we graduated. It wasn't really about the uplift of the race or like teaching African American history outside of just MLK and the I Have a Dream speech, but all the other things that I learned on my own. So there was a lot of things wrong with this school, but even though we didn't verbalize it, we taught that our school is bad because we as students are not working hard enough, or we're not as smart enough as the schools that have predominantly white and Asian students. So reading and learning on my own made me realize that there are other forces in play that and past policies that have led to this situation. And of course my mentors introduced me to a lot of texts and other materials that was in a lot of ways a catalyst for my intellectual growth. And now I just continue in reading and
sounds like it's great.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. We should publish the story.